Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 08-1046, Global Star, Inc. Petitioner versus Federal Communications Commission et al. Mr. Lake for the petitioner, Mr. Marcus for the respondents, Mr. Turner for the intervener.
Morning, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court, I am William Lake, counsel for petitioner Global Star. The lifeblood of a satellite communications company is the spectrum it uses to carry its signals. This case is about the FCC's rules for the spectrum used by two competing satellite companies, Globalstar and Iridium. The slice of spectrum involved is called the L-band. We've made a number of arguments in our brief, as to one of which the government has made a 405 objection. I'll be happy to get to all of the issues, but if I may, I would like to start with what we think is the most fundamental error in the order under review, as to which no Section 405 objection has been raised. That is the order's unexplained departure from precedent. The central fact in the case is that not all spectrum is not equal. When the Commission parceled out the L-band for mobile satellite services, it knew that the lower portion of the band was encumbered by the rights of other services to use the spectrum and the need to protect GPS, which is in the immediately lower band of spectrum. Because of these encumbrances on the lower part of the band, Iridium made clear early in the proceeding that it did not want that part of the band. It wanted the upper part, which is free and clear. Iridium also said it didn't want any of the S band for similar reasons. This is at Joint Appendix, page 262. So Iridium asked for and got the beachfront property, exclusive use of the upper part of the band. Globalstar and any other CDMA carriers got the lower part of the band with all of its encumbrances. Later, when only one CDMA carrier survived, that's Globalstar, the Commission took a fresh look at its spectrum plan. That led to the sharing order in 2004, in which the agency denied Iridium's request that some of the CDMA spectrum be reassigned to Iridium. Instead, the agency authorized Iridium to share some of the CDMA spectrum. The main reason the agency gave for refusing to reassign spectrum was the encumbrances that exist on the lower part of the L-band. The order said that to reassign spectrum, quote, would ignore the significant encumbrances that exist in the lower portion of the L-band due to radio astronomy operations in that band, as well as GPS receivers in the adjacent band. It pointed out that Iridium's spectrum, quote, is not equally encumbered. The order rejected Iridium's call for splitting the L-band down the middle, saying that, quote, we reject Iridium's proposal that spectrum parity be a consideration in our decision today. In the order under review, the agency did a 180-degree reversal of the 2004 decision without acknowledging or explaining its departure from those prior conclusions.
Mr. Lake, could you just explain one technical thing which I do not understand, and so you're going to have to use basic explanation. Does the fact that Globalstar has the S-band, does that make up, I understand that it's only for downlinks, but does that in any way make up for not having, for having some encumbrances on the L-band? That is, can you use uplinks more efficiently because your downlinks are in the S-band?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. I'm glad you asked that question because the briefs on the other side suggest that somehow the fact that Iridium uses the S-band for its downlink means that it needs less of the L-band for its uplink. That's an entire rationalization of counsel. There's nowhere in any order that that's suggested by the Commission itself, and for good technical reasons. The only spectrum that Globalstar can use for its uplink is its L-band spectrum. The S-band, where Globalstar does its downlink...
If I may, counsel, you started out by saying the 405 question is not in play, and I've listened, and I'm not sure how that is so.
As I understand it, Your Honor, the government has objected under 405 only to our notice argument. They have made no objection to our argument that the order departs without explanation from precedent, and I know of no case that suggests that that's subject to a 405 objection. As I was saying, the S-band...
When you say precedent, you mean the original, the 2004 order? Precedent?
No, I'm talking about, excuse me if I understand, I'm talking about precedents in this court. I don't know of any court decision by the circuit that holds that, departs irrationally from precedent.
From precedent. That's the precedent we're asking about. What precedent are you saying the irrational departs
yes,
from?
I'll get back to that story, but yes, the precedent
you
I'm
get
talking
back to
about,
it now. No, what precedent
I'm not sure. I'm not following your 405 argument. What precedent are you talking about?
I'm not talking about 405. What I'd like to do is to put 405 off to the end.
Oh, you can't.
The argument I'm making now of departure from precedent is not subject to a Section 405 objection.
What's the precedent? Let's assume that's right, I'm not sure what it is. What precedent?
The precedent. I'll just describe it right now. The precedent is the 2004 order. I'm sorry if I misunderstood your question. In this decision that's under review now, the agency does a 180-degree reversal of the 2004 decision, which is the precedent I'm talking about departing from.
The outgrowth argument.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And there are cases in the circuit that are very clear that the failure to seek reconsideration with respect to an outgrowth argument is subject to 405.
No, this is not the outgrowth argument. This is not a notice argument at all. This is failure to explain a departure from precedent, which is not subject to a 405 objection in any case that I know of, and hasn't been made. There hasn't been an objection to that here.
Do you have any cases which carve it up the way you do and say this is not a 405 question? That's the way I would ask.
There are many
cases.
Because
what I think you've done is relabeled it. I thought it was very interesting and kind of effective, but if there's no precedent supporting the relabeling, then I'm perplexed.
If I could explain my argument, I think you'll see that it's not a notice argument or a outgrowth argument at all. In 2004, the agency said, we're not going to reassign spectrum because the lower spectrum is not equal. It's much more encumbered.
Right.
And we reject the idea of spectrum parity. We're not going to just try to split this even, Stephen.
And then
in 2007...
And you sought reconsideration because you thought that order should be...
No, we sought reconsideration of specific rules. We did not...
You sought reconsideration.
We sought reconsideration, but not of the decision to share spectrum.
You wanted that 2004 order overturned. I'm not sure we're talking about the same case now.
No, I think if you read our petition for reconsideration carefully, we did not.
You liked the 2004 order? I'm really amazed.
We were unhappy that the commission had ordered sharing because we thought that the Iridium had not shown a need for additional spectrum. But we said we're nonetheless going to live with it, and we would like the commission to make certain specific changes in its rules, and we'll live with sharing.
You bring it in for reconsideration. Aren't you throwing the dice that you will not like what happens on reconsideration? I mean, how can you bind the commission's hands to reconsider it only in the way you want it reconsidered?
I don't know of any case, Your Honor, that has said that if a party seeks reconsideration on one issue only, that the agency 3 years later can re-decide some other issue that wasn't raised in the petition. There's no case that the government has been able to cite that
says
that.
Is there a case that says they
can't? But in any event...
Is there a case that says they can't?
Pardon?
Is there a case that says they can't?
Yes, I think there is a case that says that you can't, and that's the Sprint case, which we cited in our brief. Let me just find my note on that. But we think it's quite clearly... Yes, here we go. The Sprint case in our brief. In that case, 4 years after the commission adopted a rule, it largely jettisoned the rule without giving any notice. And it sought to justify its action just as the government is seeking to do so here by pointing to the breadth of the original notice and the fact that a petition for reconsideration had been filed on a different issue. The court rejected that argument, holding that notice was required before the agency changed the rules in a way beyond that raised by the issue in the petition.
What's the citation to that case?
315 Fed Third, and the relevant passage is on page 376 of the decision.
315 at 376. Thank you.
The thing I want to get back to is I thought, I'm reading it, you sought reversal of the 2004 order.
If the very first...
And then you said, if not that, then at a minimum, it must modify the plan to ensure that the goals of the order are accomplished. If you seek reversal of an order, reversal is complete. You didn't say partial reversal. You said reversal
what sentence
of this
are you
ill-advised
reading, Your Honor?
Decision. Huh?
What sentence are you reading?
You're at, it's at JA 832.
Well, if you read the very first sentence of our petition for reconsideration, it says we are requesting implementation of changes in the rules for L-band sharing. We go on to say we're asking the commission on the same page to modify the rules, and we enumerate the respects in which we want.
To reverse the rules, too, or in the alternative, to modify the plan to ensure that the goals of the order are accomplished. You put it in the alternative.
Well,
then they took it under advisement.
The key thing is that what we were complaining about, the thing that we were expressing unhappiness about, was that the agency had found that Iridium had shown a need for spectrum.
No, I'm not doubting that if you could measure your various concerns, you had them prioritized in your mind, and that may even be reflected. What we need to figure out is whether you opened the door with a petition for reconsideration that sought reversal, and then whether or not the commission could then properly reconsider, which is what they purported to do. And then there is a 405 question because it's an outreach. Outreach, you know what I mean? Outgrowth problem.
Mr. Lake, I'm losing track of the two different lines of argument here. I had understood that the argument that we're talking about now is an argument about the agency doing something without notice and comment, and that the other side argues it's a logical outgrowth, you argue that it's not a logical outgrowth, but the more difficult question for you is whether or not you objected to that and raised it, and that's the 405 issue. But I thought that the argument you started with today, which you describe as a reversal of precedent, might also just be described as a failure to explain. That is, that the agency at one point had said that due to the encumbrances, we can't make an equal division. And now the agency is saying we're going to make an equal division without mentioning the problem of the encumbrances. Is that right?
Exactly right. And that is a failure to explain defect, which is entirely separate and distinct from the notice issue.
The problem is you can't get to it if you don't have a timely – the issue isn't raised.
Let me assume
– See, the thing is you say you know of no case. I know of no case that parses it the way you do. That's not to say it doesn't. You can't get to that substantive, arbitrary, and capricious question if you haven't preserved by a request for reconsideration. It's all labeling games.
We don't have to preserve
that issue,
Your Honor.
It's a very interesting labeling game. I think it's very effective.
Let me posit for argument's sake that we have a 405 objection to raising our notice argument.
Right.
All that means is that the court, that issue is not cognizable in this court. It doesn't mean that we can't raise our other issues as to which there's no 405 issue. The failure to explain issue has no 405 objection. So if you conclude that we can't raise the notice issue, we still have the failure to explain issue. It's an entirely separate issue.
All right.
And there's no 405 issue there. And as Judge Garland was saying, they reversed themselves, and the two key things that they had said in their previous order, they ignored and failed to explain their departure from. One was they didn't even mention the encumbrances on our spectrum, which had been the key factor in the 2004 decision that they were reversing. The other is they didn't even try to distinguish their previous rejection of the idea of spectrum parity. And yet if you read the 2007 decision, the reassignment decision, it is entirely a spectrum parity argument.
See,
what they want to do is make sure everything
is... The reason I'm quibbling with you is because you frame it as a departure from precedent. I find that incomprehensible. It's not precedent. It's an order that's under reconsideration.
Yeah.
It's not precedent.
Okay,
I see how you're trying to frame it, but it just doesn't work.
It's an unexplained reversal of policy, if you like that better.
Okay, that may be describing what happened.
They announced a policy in 2004.
The very order under reconsideration precedent is not something that I have ever seen a case do. Judge Edwards has been here even longer than I have. We've both grown old and blind in our nation's service, like George Washington.
Okay, well, I'm
directing,
and I won't use that word again, but they announced one policy in 2004. They announced the exact opposite policy in 2007, and they didn't explain why the conclusions they reached in 2004 didn't continue to be true. Now, the order does point to one thing that it says came to light after 2004 in an attempt to justify the reversal, but that attempt fails. The order says, we learned for the first time from Globalstar's petition for reconsideration that these two companies can't share spectrum, so we had no choice but to reassign. But that assertion involves a play on words, which is echoed in the agency's brief in this court. The word sharing has been used to mean two different things in this proceeding, and the agency plays them off against each other. Mr. Marcus and I could share a single symphony subscription if we just agreed that he would go on some nights and I would go on other nights. But we couldn't both go on the same night and sit in that one seat, at least not comfortably. That's exactly the situation here. Everyone has known from the beginning of this proceeding that Globalstar and Iridium can't use the same spectrum in the same place at the same time. That was the reason why Iridium was given separate spectrum in the first place. But the two companies can share spectrum if by sharing is meant coordination of use, agreeing on who will use which frequencies in which places at which times. When the Commission ordered sharing in 2004, it expressly recognized that the sharing it was ordering would require this kind of coordination of use. The relevant passages are pages 275 and 278 and 279 of the Joint Appendix. Therefore, it was nothing new for Globalstar's petition to repeat that sharing would require coordination. And yet, the order points to the to Globalstar's petition as saying, we've suddenly learned that sharing
is
impossible.
Over your time, unless my colleagues have further questions, we'll give you
Thank
back
you.
A couple of minutes for rebuttal. We'll hear from the respondent.
May it please the Court, I'm Joel Marcus from the Federal Communications Commission. I think as the Court has already latched onto, this is a reconsideration case. The idea here is that Globalstar asked the Commission to reconsider its 2004 decision, and it's inherent in the very nature of reconsideration that an agency can and often will change its mind after it reconsiders the matter.
What do you now, say to the point in the Sprint case, which, by the way, is cited only in the reply brief of the petitioner, not in the original brief, but the Sprint case seems to say that if the reconsideration request would not put another commenter on notice of the possibility of a reversal, that there has to be a new notice?
Well, I think Sprint is a fundamentally different case than this one, Judge Sentell, and here's why. For one thing, Globalstar came in and directly asked the Commission to reconsider the very decision that it had just rendered. In Sprint, the Commission took essentially an unrelated matter and said, oh, there's a recon pending, and so therefore we can decide this unrelated matter just because there's a recon pending, and it exercised what it considered its authority under an internal regulation 47 CFR 1.1808.
Can I just add, again, I want to separate the doctrinal strands here. What you're talking about now is the substantive argument about whether notice was required or not, but before that, we have to address the 405 question on notice. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
So the argument, just to be clear, we would never even reach if we were to decide that there's a 405 problem with respect to the notice argument.
You'll never reach the argument, their procedural argument, that they lack notice. And I think that, in fact, they did not raise that. Their last second ex parte is not sufficient to have preserved
What about
that
this
argument.
Other argument? That is, even if you're correct on what can be done in a reconsideration, the agency still does have to explain why at one point, just take this as an example,
sure.
Why at one point it said encumbrances were a problem, and this time it didn't address that problem in dividing the spectrum.
Okay.
Right?
I,
before you get to whether they did that, that's right, isn't it? They would still have to explain. Yes?
As I read their brief, I saw them making a specific argument about a reversal of policy. Mm-hmm. And it's our view that on the merits that we're allowed to do that, but if we could table that for just a moment.
Let me add to what Judge Garland is saying, my piece of it, so that I'm understanding what you're about to answer.
Okay.
They're not abandoning the notice claim, but they're willing in this argument, as I hear them, to put it aside for now and say, look, we can come into court and say that what you issued is arbitrary and capricious, in part because You originally took a very strong position with respect to policy issues, and then what you finally ended up with can't be squared with what you originally said, and there's no evidence to support what you... That's what they're saying. They surely can do that.
There's no
405 issue on that.
I believe they can do that. I'm not... I mean...
You've not raised any 405.
We did not make a 405.
So now why aren't they right with respect to... How do you answer their failure to explain the shift and the lack of evidence to support the claim?
Okay, are you talking now on the merits, Judge Edwards, or are we still talking
in... The arbitrary and capricious claim with respect to, here's your final order, we're challenging it.
No, I understand, but Judge Garland was asking me a somewhat hypothetical question.
No, I'm asking...
In order to separate the doctrinal...
I think all of us are on exactly the same wavelength. Okay. So okay. Mr. Lake argued, and if you just address this substantive argument, which I understand you don't have a 405 problem with, right? And that argument is, as just if I can restate
that we changed the policy.
Without explaining.
Yes, that's right. And just so we're clear, you did not raise a 405 argument on that.
When you answer this, answer the additional point that they're arguing, and that there isn't evidence to support what you assert in any event.
Okay,
there are two things that they're arguing as part of that.
Let me address it. They make a number of different claims here, so let me separate them. One is that we have acted inconsistently with precedent, and as I was addressing,
You've changed policy.
Then let's turn to the policy, okay? And the principal policy that they seem to be objecting to is that in the earlier order, the sharing order in 2004, we said we can't do this because of encumbrances, and then we didn't say anything about it. Now let's please turn to the actual 2004 order, because I think it's very important to understand exactly where the encumbrances came into the commission's reasoning there. Yes, I do, Judge Sentell. And I'm looking, the 2004 order starts at JA 257, and I'd like you to turn, if you will, to JA 277, where the commission is specifically discussing this. This is in paragraph 49 of the 2004 order. That, I'll give you a moment to read it if you'd like.
Go ahead.
Okay. In that paragraph, paragraph 49, and this is on the portion of it that appears at page 277, that's where the commission talks about encumbrances that exist in the lower portion of the L band. And when the commission's discussing that, this is not the basis or the principal reason for why it ordered sharing. This is an explanation for why the commission was rejecting a very specific proposal put forth by Iridium that would have ensured what they called spectrum parity on a pure megahertz per party basis. In other words, what Iridium wanted was to take both the L band spectrum and the S band spectrum. It amounts to about 32 megahertz total, and they wanted to split it into three equal size chunks, 10, 10, and 10, with Iridium getting 10, Globalstar getting 10, and some other person getting 10. And the commission said, no, we can't do that. And by the way, the spectrum that Iridium wanted under its pure megahertz per party plan was essentially almost the entire L band. And if Iridium had almost the entire L band, then the encumbrances would be very important indeed. And that is the principal reason why the commission declined to accept the specific pure megahertz per party proposal. But what the commission did in the recon order had nothing to do with pure megahertz per party. It did not adopt a spectrum parity plan. In fact, there's still a gross spectrum disproportionality. If you look at the total number of megahertz assigned to the parties, it comes out to be something after the recon order with Globalstar having access to about 24.75 total megahertz of spectrum and Iridium having access to about 8.25.
Is that because you're counting the S-band then?
That's right, counting the S-band.
What do you say to Mr. Lake's point that can't count the S-band?
You have to count the S-band, Judge Garland. It's not a matter of efficiency. I think that's how you phrased your question.
In a layman's way.
Yes, it doesn't make the spectrum more efficient. But what Iridium has to do in its slice of the L band is it has to go up and down. Yeah. It has to do twice as much work in its spectrum assignment as Globalstar does. Globalstar only has to go one way. And so imagine,
so leaving out the efficiency, maybe capacity or something, does it have greater capacity because it only has to go in one direction? Or is this some consequence of the different kinds of technologies they're using such that it doesn't make any difference?
Okay. Well, the different types of technologies make it hard to compare spectrum assignments on a one-to-one basis. That's true. But you'll notice that Globalstar is not arguing here in any of its briefing papers that I ever saw that they can't conduct their business or that they don't have sufficient spectrum resources. They want more spectrum. Everybody wants more spectrum. But the fact is that because they only have to do half as much work with their spectrum, they don't need as much L band spectrum as Iridium does.
That was the kind of question I was trying to get to with Mr.
That's right.
You're saying that because Globalstar has the S band, it can, I use the word efficiently, but instead you're saying it can handle more work in the amount of the L band that it has.
That's correct, because it only has to do half as much stuff in there. And keep
in
mind,
order on reconsideration?
That's not, that particular point is not discussed on the order on reconsideration, but I don't think that that's something that was
can we tease that out of any of the orders?
In other words, where are the justifications in response to what they're saying in the order on reconsideration?
Well, the justifications on the order of reconsideration had more to do with the commission's forward-looking assessment of what the spectrum needs were of the two parties. Remember, Judge Edwards, that this the L-band and S-band spectrum, the CDMA allotment, was originally supposed to support five carriers, and there was only one carrier. And it had been on the table since 1994 that if there had been only one carrier, then there'd be a piece of spectrum that was probably going to get reassigned. And so, and everybody always knew that. And what the commission did here, and if I could direct you to page 307 of the joint appendix, the commission says both Iridium and Globalstar state that their business has grown and confidently predict that their businesses will continue to grow. And so therefore, the commission says in paragraph 17 of the recon order, this is still on page 307 of the joint appendix, in view of these considerations and in order to provide long-term certainty and stability in the big LEO market, we're going to rebalance the spectrum assignments. In other words,
respond to the original finding by the commission that Iridium's needs were only sporadic and geographic?
Well, the commission also made a specific finding in that very same paragraph on page 17. It says, based on the record before us, Iridium has made a case demonstrating its need for more spectrum. And keep in mind that the finding in the 2004 order about sporadic and geographic specific was that was of the moment. It was not a forward-looking assessment. And what the commission's doing on reconsideration is it's saying, well, let's not just look at what the spectrum is being used for today. Let's look at what the spectrum will be used for tomorrow. Let's rebalance this in a way that allows both systems to grow and both systems to have capacity.
What's the commission's justification for reducing the spectrum allotted to Globalstar?
Well, keep in mind, there's not in the recon order a specific here's our justification for reducing. This is where you have to look at the entire record of this proceeding, Judge Edwards. The reduction in the spectrum allotted to Globalstar, the CDMA allotment, was something that was implicit in the very nature of this proceeding from the very beginning. It was CDMA allotment was meant for five licensees.
The reduction was implicit. You mean a decision as to how to allocate?
Well, yes, but
might not over time, but before we were finished, involves ups and downs.
That's correct. But I think that a fair reading is this commission and the parties too essentially presume that if we wind up with one rather than five, then you're not going to need all this spectrum.
If I understand correctly, you're saying that the original allotment was not Global Star's allotment. It's all CDMA providers.
Exactly. That's ex-
since
a very
it turned
nice
out there's only one, it's not actually we're going to look here and reduce Global Star's.
No, yes. That's a very important point. I think they reduced the CDMA allotment because the one licensee who happened to be a CDMA provider essentially.
And again,
that's
something we're supposed to surmise. It's not written anywhere.
Well, it's not something that you're supposed to surmise, Judge Edwards. It's
well, that's
written.
That's the least you want us to do,
it's,
right?
No, it's written. No. It's,
well, if it's written, just tell me the paragraph.
Well, it's in the DNA of this entire proceeding. I mean, it's in the Big Leo
we
order.
We don't need another set of initials.
it's in the
DNA for the. Biology.
It's in
DMAs and.
It's implicit in the Big Leo order. It's part of what the commission was talking about when it said at the time it created this whole situation. We're doing this for five parties, and if it turns out that there's only one party, then we're going to revisit this issue of the 3.1 megahertz because basically it's not necessary. And so again, especially because this is a reconsideration order, you can't just look at this order. You have to look at the regulatory background of this proceeding, and you have to look at the complete record. And I think if I could return for one minute.
We've run out of your time. We'll give you one more minute.
Okay. I wanted to make one more point about Sprint, if I may, which is that Sprint wasn't really a reconsideration case at all. In Sprint, there was essentially a petition for a rulemaking that had been filed, and the court took that and kind of plugged it into an ongoing proceeding. But it wasn't really part and parcel of that proceeding. The commission did not purport to act on a petition for reconsideration, and it used the ongoing docket as a convenient vehicle for doing that. And so I think at the end of the day, what the court objected to in Sprint was a kind of procedural unfairness. And I really don't think that you can say that here when the issues here were explicitly noticed.
Thank you. And now is
I just have one question. When you said that the original order presumed a certain number of CDMAs and now it's down to one, does it matter how many different companies there are, how much service they're providing? That is, you can imagine if there were originally four, but the expectations about how many people were going to be using it was a certain amount, and now there's only one, but that one is now providing the same amount of service as was expected for the four. They would still need the same amount of spectrum.
Well,
I'm not sure that's right. I'm just asking.
CDMA has this unusual capability of people actually being able to sit in the seat at the symphony at the same time.
Sounds uncomfortable.
Well, at a certain point, it gets uncomfortable, you see, and that's why there was a maximum of five. And so the technology here is fairly complicated. I don't totally understand how it works myself, but there is a sort of ongoing.
You just undermined your entire argument.
I said totally, Judge Edwards. I'm not being an engineer.
Off all of my notes.
Up until that time, we had assumed that you understood all of it.
So there is a sort of a maximum capacity of the spectrum in terms of the number of people that it can hold, but the throughput, the number of conversations that it can handle, is the same for everybody in some sense. But there is this diminishment in capacity. But I think what the commission recognized was that in order for one company to have a viable ongoing business, it did not need the entire CDMA allotment if there was only one of them, because of the inefficiencies that result. When there were five of them, they would need that kind of spectrum, but now they don't.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
I think we have an intervener. Well, I understand you're anxious to get back up, but I think we have an intervener.
May it please the Court, Joshua Turner for Intervenor Iridium. I did want to focus on just the one point. The spectrum here was assigned for five CDMA systems originally. Globalstar now claims that it needs, as a single CDMA or operator, a spectrum that was sufficient to support essentially 500% of the operators that are now operating in that spectrum.
But that, isn't that a false analysis for the reasons Judge Garland suggested?
It is not.
It doesn't matter how many providers does it. It's the amount of service being
provided. Sure. It is not an exact analysis. And in this case, the record shows that Iridium is actually providing more service using 5 megahertz of spectrum than Iridium is using 27. And so I think that's
Globalstar the second time. You said you're
right. Then Globalstar is using 27. And so I think that's one of the key pieces of evidence in the record. There's a great deal of more evidence in the record that we cite in our brief, but it's one of the key pieces of evidence in the record that shows that, in fact, Iridium does need additional spectrum. I wanted to return just for a second to this point about the 3.1 megahertz. The 3.1 megahertz was on the table for reassignment as far back as the 1994 order that adopted this band plan in the first case. And this is on JA-60 and JA-61. They talk about the need to reassign this spectrum in the event, and they say it's an unlikely event, but in the event that only one CDMA operator is operating. So the commission recognized as far back as 1994 that this 3.1 megahertz of spectrum could be reassigned and that encumbrances were not a problem with respect to that and wouldn't take it off the table in terms of reassignment. They made the same basic conclusion in the reassignment notice of proposed rulemaking, and this is on JA-125. That's where that begins. It's important to emphasize here that what Iridium asked for was more than the 3.1 megahertz of spectrum that the commission initially decided could be reassigned to the TDMA operator. We asked for 5.85 megahertz of spectrum at one point. We also had the spectrum parity plan that people have been talking about here. When the commission decided in the sharing order that it was not going to give Iridium what it had asked for, it was not going to give Iridium the 5.85 megahertz, but was instead only going to reassign on a shared basis the 3.1, when they did that, that's where the commission said, we're doing that because of encumbrances. In other words, the encumbrances cause us to reject Iridium's plan for more spectrum given to Iridium. They don't say anything about encumbrances being at all relevant to the 3.1 megahertz. And I think if you look at paragraph 48 in the sharing order, this is JA-276, you see with regard to the amount of sharing to allow, we limit sharing to 3.1 megahertz in the L-band because encumbrances in the lower portion of the L-band for protecting, et cetera, limit the ability to provide service in that spectrum. So the point is that having decided that they were only going to reallocate 3.1 megahertz of spectrum and they were going to do it on a shared basis, they didn't need to worry about encumbrances anymore. And so when they changed that shared allocation to an exclusive allocation, encumbrances simply weren't an issue, and that's why it's not raised in the reassignment order in 2007.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
We'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal. Now, you do fully understand all the technology.
Don't test me, please, Your Honor. But
like we'd be able to do that.
I'd like to make if I may, in this time. One is that both the FCC and Iridium want to argue this case as though the 2004 order didn't exist. Yes, the agency said back in 1994, if we end up with only one CDMA carrier, we need to take a fresh look. But they took that fresh look in 2004. And they concluded, we will not reassign spectrum, we'll just share spectrum. So the what they said in 1994 about taking a fresh look doesn't supplant the fact that they decided not to reassign in 2004. They gave specific reasons for that, and they didn't deal with those reasons when they reversed that decision.
Well, what do you say to that last argument by Iridium Council that discussion at paragraphs 48 and 49 are about why encumbrances should stop giving even more than the 3.1 megahertz?
We think that's wishful thinking, Your Honor, that the Iridium advocated a principle of competitive, they called it, quote, competitive parity in spectrum allocations. This is at page 352 and 353 of the joint appendix. They were arguing, yes, a specific plan, but they were specifically arguing for a principle of competitive parity. And that principle was rejected by the commission. The commission said, we reject Iridium's proposal that spectrum parity be a consideration in our decision.
When they were referring to spectrum parity there, were they talking about parity across both the L and the S band in terms of the total amount, or are they only talking about parity in the L band?
They were talking about parity in the L band, Your Honor.
Only.
The Iridium likes to mention its original plan, but the Commission gave no attention to the part of their plan that involved dividing some of the spectrum off and giving it to a third party for the simple reason that no third party came forward and said it wanted it. The other thing I would just say, if I may, is that most of the arguments that Mr. Marcus came up with, all of them, about why the encumbrances might be less important now than they were before, about why the having the L band makes it that you don't need as much of the, excuse me, having the S band means you don't need as much as the L band, none of that is in the order. That's entirely post hoc rationalization by counsel. If you look at the order that's under review here, it doesn't even discuss the encumbrances. It doesn't say the encumbrances are less important now than they were in 2004 because that's all counsel.
Yeah, I think we have run out of your time again, counsel.
Thank you.
So unless my colleagues have further questions, the case will be submitted. Give us recess.